else that came out and maybe some of the context of these races. Let's go a little bit more local. These are very important races you don't always hear about. Let's go on the county level.
Yeah, so county level, we had a lot of races that we were keeping our eye on. We had some county board races, and we had some county sheriff races, even a county auditor or treasurer race. Starting with the sheriffs, since they represent the entire county where they live, we had contested races in Clearwater County, Wadena County, and Carlton County. And Clearwater County, we had four candidates that were vying for that top law enforcement officer spot. In all of these cases, the current sheriff has chosen to retire, so not running for reelection. So that often prompts, you know, more candidates than usual because, you know, well, you got an open seat, you got an open slot, you can get in there. We had Adam Gunderson and Clarence LaCroix are going to move on for the sheriff role there. Gunderson earned 35% of the vote to Clarence LaCroix's 31%. So it was a close one there. And you had one other candidate that was very close behind as well. Vern Wittenberg was just about 60 votes behind Clarence LaCroix. And then in Wadena County, we actually had five candidates that are seeking to replace the retiring sheriff there. However, one candidate came out quite a bit on top. Brian Savaloja, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. I've actually never heard it said out loud. He earned 43% of the vote. And Milo Scott is at 560 votes, 18%. So those two go on then to the general election. And then finally, we had a contested race in Carlton County. Again, quite a significant difference there. Very significant difference there between the candidates. Dan Danielson earning 76% of the vote with 5,300 votes. He was the candidate who was endorsed by the seated sheriff, Kelly Lake, one of the few female sheriffs in northern Minnesota who is not seeking reelection. Chad Walsh also moving on in that race. Sheriff's races are interesting to me because it's a position that you may not think like, why do we elect that position, really? It's someone who has to be specialized in law enforcement. And so I always find it interesting. But I will say we had very great participation in our election guide from the sheriff's candidates. And so I think that was a resource for folks to be able to compare those people who may otherwise seem like kind of a opaque or like you wouldn't know exactly, you know, where they stand on things. And we asked a lot of questions related to issues that we see in the newsroom, like, for instance, the interaction of mental health and jails and things like that. So, we also had some county board races that we were watching close to home here in Grand Rapids. We had the Itasca County Commissioner District 1 race. District 1 includes the cities of Cohasset, Deer River, Est Lake, and Lonnie Wachowski was the top vote getter there, actually topping the seated incumbent Corey Smith by 120 votes, although both will move on to the general. And as we know, I mean, you know, we talked about turnout. It may have been good for a primary, but the general election definitely attracts more voters, and so that could change. So it's not set in stone. Chris Reed coming in third there in that race. We also had some races in Cass County that we were watching, including a special election. The special election was to replace the late Commissioner Rusty Lilliquist, who died in office in February. Aaron Young was the top vote getter there, and Leslie Bouchonville got second place. So they will both move on to the general election to fill that seat. We also had the District 4 seat, and District 4 includes the cities of Hackensack and Bacchus, I believe. And we had the incumbent Scott Bruins and Tyler Seifert are both moving on. And Seifert did actually edge out Bruins a bit in the vote totals there, but it was, again, very close race, and so they will both move on to the general. And lastly, in Crow Wing County, another race that we are keeping an eye on, Rosemary Franzine is the incumbent commissioner there, and she earned 58% of the vote in the three-way race So she will move on there. And newcomer Don Espy, earning 583 votes, coming in second place there, will move on to the general election as well.
All right. Hey, you mentioned our primary guide, the election guide the newsroom put together at KEXC.org. We'd love to hear from you this morning. If you use that to get information to go to the primaries, you can text 218-326-1234. What do you know about how many people were actually using the guide there?
Well, I don't have the final numbers, but I think I can safely say that we're in the six digits as far as page views are concerned for our guide. We had 18,000 page views alone on Monday of our guide, people seeking that information out. And, you know, it feels great to know that all of that work and effort are helping to inform people. I have a friend from college who still lives in the Twin Cities, who told me over the weekend that she naturally happened upon our election guide seeking out information on the statewide candidates and trying to help decide who she was going to vote for. Did not target it based on knowing me or, you know, anything, mm-hmm. and used our guide to be a more informed voter. And there's really nothing better than that, to hear, you know, from someone that you've known for 20 plus years that they accidentally stumbled upon this resource that you and your team put together and appreciated it. Quick correction I wanted to throw out there about Cass County board races. So District 3 includes Hackensack, Bacchus, and Chickamauga Beach.
Okay.
And District 4 includes Walker, Longville, and Reamer. So those were the two races we were watching in Cass County.
All right. Coming up, we're going to hear from some of the election workers that have been out there, as our news team was all across northern Minnesota and was able to collect some of the stories, whether it was from voters or from the folks that were making these primaries happen. And don't worry, there will be updates to the election guide. Am I right?
There sure will. There sure will. We're gearing up to send out emails now that we have the primary winners and we know who is advancing. So the work continues.
That's right. We've got a lot of other things in the works that'll be happening before the general election in November, including some partnerships. You've already done some partnerships with ICTV. You'll be working with Lakeland Public Television and doing some debates and all kinds of different things that might be happening.
Yeah, we're excited at all of the opportunities that we have to cover rural elections as best as possible. And with ICTV, you know, keep an eye out. We'll be doing some more local races, but there's some current ones right now available for the other county board seat that didn't have a primary. You can find that at ICTV. Watch ITCV. Oh my gosh. Watch ICTV.org right now, as well as the county attorney seats.
All right. We're going to take a listen now to some of the people that are behind the scenes and make the primary and our elections possible.
When I was young, I went to work for a small government, and that was when I realized grassroots is what really matters. I might not have a voice in a bigger arena, but here in our township, this is where it all starts. And I just love the process. I think that our elections are a beautiful thing. It's important. It's the foundation of our entire democracy, nation, what we wish to be, right? So I tell people, if you don't participate, it doesn't work. Well, a lot of people maybe early voted. That's just a fabulous option, especially for our elder people that live up here. When we get closer to the November election, you don't know what the weather's gonna be. Some of us don't know, we might be at the doctor, right? We might be here, we might be there. You might be a snowbird and this is where you vote. So the availability of vote by mail, absentee ballots, early voting, I think brings out a lot more people than if we just limited it to this one day. And if we're going to limit to one day, let's make it a national holiday and make it compulsory.
Well, my family was very, very involved with, you know, social responsibilities, and so they taught us at a very young age to get involved and to, you know, basically to pitch in and do our bit. You know, I've always been one, I get real frustrated when I hear kind of the election, everyone's talking about how screwed up it is, and I wish people had a better understanding of just how many checks and balances and things that we count before we even start, and the things we, you know, we know how many ballots are, we know how many of this and that. And then this evening when we're all done, you know, we'll be spending a good hour just basically doing the self-audit of, is everything working out right? Do we have the right number of ballots, the right, all the counts done? And then it goes to the county, and it basically gets all checked all over again. I mean, you know, our election numbers are accurate, and they're secure.
You're going to be 92 on Sunday.
Don't say that.
Don't.
I was just telling her how old.
How old are you?
I'm 27. So this is my third election.
He's doing a super job, too.
I try to do the best job that I can. I try to do it as good as I can.
Gwen was saying she's imparted a lot of wisdom onto you.
She has. She
What's
has.
The biggest lesson you've learned from her?
Stay standing, even when you want to sit down. I think that's good for life, though, too. You know? Just to keep going and keep on even when you get tired.
But I love working with him.
It's fun.
Well, I think our elections are run like kind of how we run our small towns. You know, it's very personal. We want everybody to feel welcome when they come in to vote and, you know, just know that your vote matters.
Hearing there from the election judges, the folks that were at the polls yesterday, Chelsea, what do you, in hearing their voices, what does that bring out to you?
It almost makes me a little weepy, I'll be honest with you. You know, I always try to explain to people what I most appreciate about this job. And it is truly just talking to folks that are passionate about things. And from people who are passionate about this issue in particular, that is so moving to me. You know, and you're just showing up for your neighbors, you're showing up for the country, you're showing up for the state, your county, your city. And, you know, I you can hear it. You can hear it in their voices how much it matters.
Mm-hmm. And people doing it for a big part of their life. Some people, you know, new to it. I know some of the reporting from the news team was there were lots of new faces. I think it was from Emma in Hibbing area, or Hibbing or Chisholm, new poll workers there.
Yeah, it sounded like there was like a larger class than usual of new election judges, which that can be a challenge for places to find people who are able to dedicate that amount of time to doing something like this. And it is a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of responsibility.
Are you like me, like when we retire, we're definitely going to do it?
I'll be honest with you. I have a little bit of FOMO all the time that I can't do it.
I know. But hey, we do a lot for elections. We covered the primaries yesterday, and we're giving you updates throughout our morning show. Kari Hedlund coming up at 9 o'clock for Headwaters. We'll also have the Up North report before that as well. Let's get to some of the outcomes of city races across the region.
Yeah, so we had some primaries on the Iron Range as well as in Bemidji. Starting with Bemidji here, we had for the at-large city council race, we had two longtime council members and one newcomer in the mix. Audrey Thayer is the incumbent for that seat. And then we had Ron Johnson, who was on the council for more than two decades, but after redistricting happened from the 2020 census, his address was actually moved out of the ward that he used to represent. And so he lost his seat on the council for that reason. And then he decided to run for the at-large seat. And so Ron and Audrey move on to the general election. Grace Wilder was the newcomer in the mix who came in third there. And Johnson actually topped Thayer a little bit in that primary race. So we'll have to see how it goes at the general. We also had a race for mayor in Chisholm and Cloquet and Hibbing. All three of those cities had contested primaries. And in Hibbing, we had the incumbent mayor, Peter Hajduk. He won 70% of the vote. Marissa Allen also moving on in that race. In Cloquet, the candidates moving on there are Sheila Lamb and Dave Halbeck. Sheila Lamb topping Hallbeck with nearly 47% of the vote. And then in Chisholm, the mayor is not running for re-election there, so that's an open seat. And we had Travis Vaik and Joy Frazier, very close, only 7 votes between those two, and they move on to the general election. And lastly, we have an at-large council seat in Hibbing, and the incumbent Justin Faso moving on, but Mark Borland actually earned more votes last night, and he will also move on to the general. We had 2 others that Tiffany Schleppegrell and Angela Jivery, who did not move on in that race. And one more that we should mention, too, the Red Lake School Board. Mm. It's the only one in our coverage area that had a primary. Most of the time, school boards don't have primaries, but they do up in Red Lake. Of course, it's a unique school district anyway. It's the only school district in Minnesota that's within a sovereign nation, serving Red Lake Nation students. And that board had 4 open seats going into the election with 14 candidates that filed to fill those seats. So the top 8 then move on to the general. What was interesting out of that race, I won't list all the names here, but what was interesting out of that race was the fact that just 1 of the 3 incumbents who filed to run are moving on. So 2 of the 3 incumbents did not garner enough votes to move on to the general election. So we had several newcomers that are going to potentially fill the board up there.
You can find a lot of information, more information as Chelsea's telling us more about it at KAXC.org. We'll continue to be with you until 9 o'clock, telling you more. We'll have some Minnesota music coming up next. And at 9 o'clock, we bring you Headwaters with Kari Hedlund. We receive support from Adolescent Crisis Response Team. It's a crisis intervention service, a program of first call for help, 211, lending support to residents under the age of 18, as well as parental supports when in crisis or experiencing family distress 24/7. Thanks also goes out to Timberlake Lodge and Hotel in Grand Rapids. They offer on-site amenities like a restaurant and full bar and the Grand Splash pool area with water slides and a hot tub. Further details are available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
Took that shot in the dark, I didn't need a reason. Flying like an arrow, hardly knew the season. Spin those worries around, go to make the bed. Already picked the poison, it's inside my head. all water and blue eyes. Today I am the same, all water and blue eyes. Today I am the same, all water and blue eyes.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Leila Fadel. The University of Michigan has a new grading policy for freshmen in 2027. Students in their first semester at the university's College of Literature, Science, and the Arts will have their grades covered up. Their transcripts will only show a pass or no credit. The school says the pilot program will help, quote, curb the mental health crisis among people of college age. Shay Vance wrote about it for the Chronicle of Higher Education, and she joins me now. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
So why does the university think this will help students' mental health?
Yeah, well, a big part of the reasoning here is that Michigan essentially says in this news release, you know, this is a formative time in a young adult's life, and we don't want to add to that pressure necessarily. And we want to help students start strong. You know, Michigan is essentially saying we don't want a tough first semester to lead to a spiral. You know, we don't want students to get a C or a D and to think that that's the end of the line of potentially being able to get a good GPA and therefore a good placement in grad school or a good job. And they're also hopeful that this will encourage students to explore tougher subjects. So maybe a student who didn't take very many science classes in high school wants to try out a chemistry track. This policy might make them say, you know, so what if I get a C? It's worth a try, and maybe I'll like it and be good at it.
Now, the school says the covered up letter grades will be kept internally for tracking eligibility on sports teams and academic honors. I mean, I would freak out if I couldn't see my grades and didn't know exactly how I was doing. Do you have a sense of how students are reacting?
Yeah, I mean, they're reacting pretty well. I mean, I get the sense from what I'm seeing in other reporting and online that a lot of current students are a little bit bitter that this didn't happen in time for them to be freshmen. And a lot of potential applicants to the class of 2031 that will enroll next year are pretty excited about what this could mean for them and, you know, what this could mean for maybe I won't have to try as hard, but also what this could mean for, you know, maybe I can take that tougher class. So students are excited, and, you know, maybe the older students are a little bit upset.
Are there any potential drawbacks to this policy?
Yeah, so I spoke to a good deal of teaching and learning experts who had a pretty wide variety of opinions on this. Some people think that this is simply going to demotivate students. You know, that you're going to have a bunch of freshmen coming to campus who think that they won't have to try very hard in class and that it's actually just going to set them back and not give them that boost that Michigan hopes it will. And then a lot of people also think that this could just add to the crisis of grade inflation. You know, this trend of professors across the country giving out good grades to students who haven't necessarily earned them. Colleges right now are feeling a lot of pressure to keep students enrolled and maintain those high performance rates. And students are increasingly panicked about what a C or D might look to grad schools or employers. Mm-hmm. And so some people are worried that this is just more, you know, passing out good grades. And there's also concerns from some people that this just signals the beginning of the end of letter grading. You know, what if this is the start of universities just grading simply for competency rather than excellence?
Now, other schools have done this, though, right? How has it worked out there?
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's a small club. It's pretty much Wellesley, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Swarthmore, and the California Institute of Technology that have these similar policies. It's worked at those schools for a long time. At MIT, they've had that policy since 1968. Mm-hmm. But you also have schools like Johns Hopkins University where they
will have to leave it there, unfortunately, Shay. Thank you
no
so
worries.
Much. Shay Vance
have a good
is a
one.
Reporting fellow for the Chronicle of Higher Education. Thank you for joining us. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Michelle Martin.
Morning Edition, you hear it here on People Powered, KEXE. Coming up this afternoon, the news of the afternoon, it's All Things Considered, followed by the news from Canada, it is As It Happens. It's 8:24. I'm Heidi Holton with Chelsea Perkins. We're going to be bringing you the Up North report as well. That's got some more results from our primary elections. We'll be talking more and giving a little context to that. All getting up to 9 o'clock when Kari Hedlund is our host for Headwaters. At 1 o'clock today, it's our volunteer host, David John, and Dave the Wave tonight at 7 o'clock.
Dave the Wave. All right. United Way of Bemidji Area has their annual wine and beer tasting social on Thursday from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Sanford Center. Guests can sample a variety of drinks and food from area bars and restaurants while listening to live music from Rhonda and Orlando. There will also be games, a raffle, and a silent auction. Tickets are available at unitedwaybemidji.org. You must be at least 21 to attend.
You can join the North Country Trail Association for a hike through Grand Rapids, and that is coming up Friday. You meet at the Itasca County Family YMCA parking lot at 6 for a brief ice cream social before a 4-mile one-way hike to East Rapids Elementary. You can either catch a ride back to the Y or hike back from there.
And there's still some county fairs going on in our region. The Beltrami County Fair kicks off today in Bemidji, running through August 16th. The Carlton County Fair starts tomorrow, also running through the 16th in Barnum. And the Central St. Louis County Fair is the 14th through the 16th in Meadowlands.
Did you get to the Crow Wing County Fair last week?
I did.
Was it last week or the
yes.
week before? Yeah.
On my birthday.
All right. So what were the highlights?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I just love the county fair so yeah. much.
Did you grow up in Cass County?
No,
you were Crow Wing.
Crow Wing.
Okay. Because yep. I was like. Yeah, anyway.
Always on my birthday or very close to it anyway. I didn't actually go to it a whole lot when I was younger, but mm-hmm. once I started working at the Brainerd Dispatch, we always got assigned to cover the fair. And my favorite thing was to just go to the fair with no idea what story I was going to leave with. And so, this time I didn't have a story to cover. I was just going to enjoy myself. So you got to wander through all the animals and see all the goats and the chickens and the cows and the horses and the bunnies. Oh my gosh, so many bunnies. And
you're talking about our yard at home. It's crazy with bunnies right now.
Oh my gosh, well, some of these bunnies too are so fluffy you couldn't even see their eyes, you know. Aww. It's like, how do they see? But very cute. Also, of course, you know, you have the food, you have all the local food.
What'd you have? Come on, they've been it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I had some wontons that were filled with spinach artichoke,
ooh,
which was actually really tasty. Huh. And then I had some cheese curds, jalapeno cheese curds, and the absolute classic. You have to get the honey sundae at the Crow Wing County Fair. It is the North Central Beekeepers Association, the local beekeepers with local honey. You got some vanilla ice cream, you got some honey, and you got some sunflower seeds.
Nice.
Oh, such a good combo.
Yeah. County fairs, we'd love to hear from you. What's your favorite part of them? 218-326-1234. Do you go on any rides?
No, I love rides, but I am turned off by the fact that you have to buy tickets. Like, I just wish that I could just go up and like just pay for a single sure. ride instead of needing to like go through this extra process. So
sure.
Also, they had no Ferris wheel.
I was going to say I can't do the rides I did as a kid anymore. Just I would probably pass out immediately from, you know, I'm just not used to that kind of stuff anymore. But we usually do the Ferris wheel because you get such a great bird's eye view of the area at the Itasca County Fair.
Yeah, I was surprised. I know that they did, you know, just 2 years ago, I went through the rides area with my friend and her kids and the Ferris wheel was there. And this year, no Ferris wheel. So, yeah.
We'd love to hear from you this morning, 218-326-1234. Also going on this weekend, Mines and Pines Revisited. It's at Bennett Park in Hibbing. You can experience live music, art, and local food from 10 to 6, both Friday and Saturday. There's a full schedule at minesandpines.org.
And the Crow Wing County Master Gardeners are having a plant sale on Saturday from 9 to noon at Northland Arboretum in Brainerd. And you can find a variety of locally grown perennials, shrubs, and ground cover plants.
Also going on, United Way of Bemidji area is hosting Stuff the Bus. It's a school supply drive to benefit K-12 students in Bemidji and Black Duck. Items like crayons, pencil boxes, and backpacks may be dropped off at many locations, including the Tourist Information Center next to Paul and Babe, now until August 18th.
Oh, and this is a fun one. The Happy Dancing Turtles Summer Bingo Scavenger Hunt is still on through August 15th. I've taken part in that. It's a fun thing to do. Look for 24 items on your bingo card and submit photos. The more rows or columns you complete, the more chances you have to win a prize. Find the full details and register at happydancingturtle.org.
Coming up next, we will bring you the Up North Report. We'd like to thank Grand Rapids State Bank for their support. They're committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Weather around our region, it looks like we'll see highs 79 to 84 for our day, partly sunny with calm northwest winds, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon and into the evening. Mostly cloudy tonight, lows in the mid to upper 50s.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Progressives won again in Minnesota on Tuesday. Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan decisively beat southeastern Minnesota Representative Angie Craig in the Democratic primary for Senate. Flanagan earned nearly 60% of the vote. In her concession speech, Craig urged supporters to shift their support to Flanagan. If elected, she would be the first Native American woman to serve in the Senate. Flanagan will face political newcomer, former NFL sideline reporter Michelle Tafoya. Tafoya handily beat a crowded field of candidates, including party-endorsed Adam Schwarzy. In a statement celebrating her win, Tafoya said, quote, "This isn't about red versus blue. It's common sense versus crazy." Minnesota is now set to elect its first female governor in November. Republican House Speaker Lisa Daymuth won the nomination Tuesday, beating Trump-endorsed Mike Lindell and party-endorsed Kendall Qualls. In a statement, Daymuth said Minnesotans want a fresh start and a clean break from Democrats running the state. She says Amy Klobuchar would be more of the same. Senator Klobuchar was without a significant primary challenger and easily won the DFL nomination for governor. She says Minnesotans need a governor that would put them first and not be a rubber stamp for Donald Trump. In another clear victory, former federal worker Trina Swanson beat reality TV personality Luke Gulbronson for the Democratic nomination in Minnesota's 8th Congressional District. Swanson received over 75% of the vote. She'll face Republican Representative Pete Stauber in November. In a statement, Swanson said Minnesotans are ready for representation that puts kitchen table issues first. While the statewide and congressional races capture headlines, voters narrowed the field in a number of local races Tuesday, too. In northwestern Itasca County, voters advanced Lonnie Witkowski and current County Commissioner Corey Smith. And incumbent Audrey Thayer and former City Councilor Ron Johnson will advance in the Bemidji City Council race. You can find the full list of results for races up and down the ballot at kaxe.org. If you visit the polls in Wadena, don't be surprised if you get a hug. Gwen Macklem has worked the elections for decades. She was the greeter on Tuesday, and she's a hugger. Now in her 90s, she's passing on her wisdom to a new leader, 27-year-old Charles Stidler Thompson, who works for the city.
So this is my third election. Okay. So
he's doing a super job, too.
The biggest lesson Stidler Thompson has learned from Macklem?
Stay standing, even when you want to sit down.
Yes, and I'm about ready to fall down.
I think that's good for life, though, too, you know? Just to keep going and keep on even when you get tired.
In Clearwater County, election workers shared their thoughts on safe and secure elections with Larissa Donovan.
Being part of the electoral process is all about being a part of something greater than yourself. And for Bagley election official Mark Edevold, it's a longstanding tradition.
Oh, my family was very, very involved with social responsibilities. And so they taught us at a very young age to get involved and to, basically to pitch in and do our bit.
As claims of fraud in the election process persist in national headlines, Edevold says there is a lot of work that goes into maintaining fair and accurate elections.
I wish people had a better understanding of just how many checks and balances and things that we count before we even start.
Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
And Stella Mehrhoff spoke with two up-and-comers in Deer River.
Lucille Sobolik and John Sobolik Jr. weren't listed on any ballots, but that might be because Lucille is 7 and John is 8. The siblings were playing outside as voters walked into Deer River City Hall next door. Lucille and John learned all about voting in school. They even have some ideas about laws they'd enact if they were elected governor.
That you can't put garbage in the lakes.
Eat popcorn every single day. Everybody has to eat ice cream every single day.
If they've earned your vote, make sure to head to the polls in 2046. Stella Mayerhoff, Report for America Corps member for KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
It's 8:35. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here on KAXE.
Man, what a great edition of the Up North Report from the KAXE news team, bringing you everything from the statewide results all the way down to what's happening in the polling places across northern Minnesota. And shout out to two of the newest Minnesotans, Emma Crabb and Stella Mayerhoff, who just were able to vote in Minnesota. You know, the rule is if you are a resident for 20 days or more, you get to vote in an election. So both of them were able to vote in their first election, covering their first Minnesota elections. And for Stella, it was her first sort of political reporting that she's done ever. So great introduction and great job from my team. Very proud of them.
Yeah, it was fun to hear Stella getting the difficult information from those young people who want to run for office someday.
I know. I mean, ice cream every day.
Popcorn all the time.
No, anti-pollution campaigning.
Yeah, you couldn't be better. Coming up, we'll have more results from the statewide primary elections, county, city, all of that.
So deep, but my love so wide. If I don't lock my door, who knows what will come inside? Cause it's a man's world, and you know I do my best. I can't express my woman self without a shield across my chest. Some women make it look so easy, they do it all alone. Well, I envy those women, cause I love to be alone. But it's a man's world, and you know I do my best. I can't express my woman self without a shield across my a man's world, and you know I do my best. I can't express my woman self without a shield across my chest. Oh, I can't express my woman self without a shield across my chest.
That's Cat Clyde with the song called Man's World. It's 8:39 and you're listening to The Morning Show. It's here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton with Chelsea Perkins. I'm standing now. This is very important. We've got some history was made. in Minnesota with the primary yesterday.
Yes, yeah. Very true. So for the first time ever, both major parties will put forward a woman candidate for governor in Minnesota, which means that we're going to have a woman governor most likely. Mm-hmm. And we have Lisa Damith, who won on the Republican side, and Amy Klobuchar, who is on the Democratic side of things. So, yeah. Exciting for Minnesota to have, you know, a history-making moment.
You know, pretty contentious race leading up to the primary for the Lieutenant Governor, Peggy Flanagan, and Congresswoman Angie Craig. How did the state vote in this race?
Yeah, well, so that one, you certainly had a mix of like which counties went for which candidate. And in our coverage area, northern Minnesota, most of our counties did go for Flanagan. But in Wadena, Cass, Crow Wing, and Aiken counties, Craig did get the majority of the vote there. Flanagan took all of the rest of northern Minnesota, particularly was heavily Flanagan in Clearwater and Beltrami, Coochiching, St. Louis counties, Carlton County, Itasca County also leaned Flanagan. But, you know, you have reservation communities across northern Minnesota, and Peggy Flanagan, as an Indigenous woman, and, you know, had strong support there. And if Flanagan goes on to win that Senate seat, she would be the first Indigenous woman to ever serve in the U.S. Senate.
Hmm.
We also had some variation, too, on the GOP side of things for the Senate. Michelle Tafoya won quite handily in that race. But up in northwestern Minnesota, like Kitson County, Roseau County, Lake of the Woods County, they leaned toward Adam Schwartzy, who was the endorsed candidate on the Republican side of things. Otherwise, Tafoya was the winner across much of our region there. And when it comes to the GOP primary for the governor's race, we had actually most of northern Minnesota lean towards Mike Lindell, the former, I guess, MyPillow CEO. However, in Cass, Crow Wing, and Aiken counties, Lisa Damith was the top vote getter there. And of course, Lisa Damith went on to win that primary race.
Our news team was out at the polls all across northern Minnesota, and they were talking with folks. And coming up right now, we're going to hear from some of the voters that were there and some of the reasons why they showed up for the primary yesterday.
Ensure the right candidates that, you know, that we feel are the right candidates can come through for the primaries at least. We had our personal preference for the sheriff's race local-wise, and then we feel like we, you know, for the other ones, we wanted to make sure that the ones we, that they make it to the, you know, to the final. I think what's been going on in the state, we're not really satisfied with what's been happening, so we want some of that stuff to get taken care of.
Because we need to change the American way. And we need better candidates to do a better job than what's being done right now. Limiting the taxes so that we're not, you know, they're not constantly taxing us. The most important is taking care of the economy.
Well, we wanted to vote for the right people, and we did, I think. I did.
Same.
Just to get out and vote the right way.
Please vote, everybody.
Yeah, it's a civic duty. It's got to be, you know, when I was younger, I didn't vote as often. And with things going on the way they are, I feel like it's important to vote.
A lot of them, actually.
Affordability, cost of living, you know.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
I mean, I teach in a school, so I mean, everything that has to do with school issues, I mean, it's always playing in the back of my mind as far as those concerns go.
You know, fraud is a big one, too.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like more needs to be done with that. Mm-hmm. So.
Voices from the primary election in Minnesota yesterday here on KEXE. It is 8:44. We receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly. I really appreciate sort of the telling the story of an election. That's what our reporters were doing. It wasn't just about the horse race.
Right. And, you know, for us to be out there in the field, we really get a vibe check. We get a sense of what is happening in those places, those town halls spread all across our region where democracy is in action. And you also get some really fun stories, like Larissa Donovan in Clearbrook ran into the cousin of the namesake of the polling place, which was a fun little tidbit that we were able to include. Robert Westrom, a voter there, talked with us about who he was planning to vote for Clearwater County Sheriff. But he was casting his ballot in the West Western Gymnasium, which is inside the former school that's been converted into City Hall and Community Center there. Wes Westrom was a 1950s Major League Baseball star from Clearbrook, and he played for the New York Giants, and he coached for the Mets, and there was a whole display that's all dedicated to him. And so we have this great picture of Robert in front of the display of his cousin there. You know, we also heard from Megan, and who went to Kego Township, in which is near Longville in Cass County, where they had to move a whole bunch of firefighter helmets in order to set up the booths there, because the voting took place in the Longville Area Fire Department building.
Yeah, I saw some photos from our photographer, Lori Schall, from the McGregor area. That also you could see a fire truck right behind where you voted. And, hope you know, it's very, very used space, I would say. All kinds of things that the township office
doing. Man, what a slice of life there. And, yeah. Man, Lori Schall, just huge shout out to her. She went all over yesterday taking just phenomenal photos of these places. And Shamrock Township was one of the places she stopped, which is right near McGregor. And you can see in the background decorations from their Shamrock Shindig in the background as people are voting. We'll have some more photos from Lori up that are going up today. We'll share a gallery of some of the excellent photos that she took. But what a just truly, you know, great way to get out there and meet the people, especially for our newest reporters. Emma Crabb was saying to me yesterday, like, man, I met so many city officials just by going out and doing this. And, you know, she's new to the area and is new to the coverage of this area. So it was an opportunity for her to go out there and meet folks. She was in Hibbing, which saw an influx of first-time poll volunteers, 8 newcomers, approximately 50 volunteers that are staffing the polls. And that's like a higher than usual number. And one of those first-timers was 79-year-old Leslie Peterson. He said he became interested in poll working after attending a state caucus in February. And it was that curiosity that drove him to sign up. He says that he's planning to return in November, which will then, he'll be a second time poll worker.
A thing I love about that photo of Leslie and hearing his story, Leslie, right?
Leslie, yep.
Is that he's busting stereotypes. He's got like an iPad in front of him. He's doing the technology that needs to happen.
Yes. Yeah. He's doing the dang thing.
Yeah. He's making it happen. We heard from our senior correspondent, Scott Hall. He said that Wes Westrom was an occasional guest on the sports page in the 1990s.
You know what? I was counting on Scott to weigh in on this. I knew we were going to get something from the sports page, guys.
Will it show up in the trivia on Friday for the sports page? Who knows?
We'll have to see.
Yeah. What else as the reporters came back into the office, or you were hearing what was going on, what were they excited about or finding out there?
Well, Stella spent some time in Deer River, and Stella Mayerhoff, and she not only brought back, you know, you heard some of the cute stories from the kids who and what they would do if they were governor, but she also met David and Janice McClure. They've been married for 64 years and moved to Deer River in 1968, and they were there voting together at Deer River City Hall. And, you know, they talked about not only like being there to vote, but like they ran into people they knew. And, you know, that's such a common experience too, right? When you go to vote, when you're out in the community, they ran into someone there, and she was able to relay that exchange in our blog post. She also talked to Deer River resident Brad Box, and he talked about how he'd voted in every election since he was 18 years old, and that it was part of his civic duty, and he thinks voting is so important. She also was able to talk to some election judges in Deer River, and they talked about how they had considerably more than normal turnout for a primary, and that they were hardly able to finish their stories. Kelly Barrett was there from Talmoon. She said that the city of Deer River was seeking election judges, and she answered that call and trained in to work there.
That's right. You know, the state needs folks to help out. I don't know if there are openings, but people can always find out by contacting their counties if they need more poll workers and all of that. Stella, I think, won the unofficial contest for fanciest polling place she found.
It's true. That's another thing that's fun, is just seeing the variety of places. Like we mentioned, you know, you have some where you can see like the fire trucks in the background, and you have others that almost look like they're set up for maybe a wedding that's taking place this weekend. Yeah. Very fancy with the, you know, lights and curtains and such. And then you had in Chisholm, which was at the Chisholm Athletic Complex, we had the red, white, and blue panel walls behind the voting places. Lori Shaw in particular loves to find the patriotic curtains and things that oftentimes are sewn by election judges or township officers in these places. Man, you really can appreciate. And of course, you had in Red Lake, the giant Red Lake Government Center eagle, which is appropriate for the day.
That's for sure. Coming up, we'll have more news from National Public Radio. We're here about the effects of tariffs from Canada on the construction business. And at 9 o'clock, we bring you Headwaters.
Steve Inskeep with NPR's Morning Edition. 50 years ago, KAXE became the first rural public radio station in the nation, serving northern Minnesota. 50 years ago, the first rural public radio station in the United States. Great public radio starts with a mission to serve the community. From Morning Edition to All Things Considered to the local news and the Up North Report, KAXE keeps you informed. The goal is to strengthen civic health in rural northern Minnesota. Let's think about that, civic health, by making local government and elections more understandable and accessible and transparent before, during, and after the vote. So congratulations on 50 years to KAXE.
Your membership has gotten us here to 50 years of KAXE. Do your part. Text the word donate, 218-326-1234.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. President Trump's new tariffs on Canadian products are scheduled to take effect next week. Trump announced last month he wanted a 50% tax on many Canadian imports, from clothing to building materials like plywood and cement. The countries could come to an agreement before then to avoid them. But as Richard Haller from North Country Public Radio reports, the uncertainty is already causing stress for business owners and customers.
The scent of sawdust, diesel fumes, and cedar sap hangs in the air at a lumber yard in Rensselaer Falls, New York, just 15 miles south of the Canadian border. This business, JP Building Supply, stores and sells all types of building materials, including sheathing like plywood. It buys around a third of its lumber from Canada. James Putman, the owner, says that if these tariffs really do move forward, they are in trouble.
I mean, that's going to affect us tremendously. If things bump up 50%, that means we have to add on 50%, because we've got to put it on to the customer, and that's just going to push everything else up.
For the past year and a half, the Trump administration has aggressively tariffed Canada. But after the Supreme Court ruled that Trump didn't have the authority to impose certain tariffs by executive order, the government had to refund around $100 billion. Now it's imposing new tariffs under a different provision that had never been used before. Across the border in Canada, Hank Vetter is a sales manager at a lumber business in Ottawa that ships 60% of its product to the U.S. He says the threat of these tariffs alone is already having an impact on his U.S. customers like home builders and contractors.
they say, hey, if that 50% is coming in, I need to do one of two things. I'm going to either order today before the tariffs kick in, or then I'm going to wait until there's relief in those tariffs.
Vetter says these tariffs are causing a domino effect, raising import costs on specific items, which then pushes companies to raise all of their prices.
So then that affects the contractor because he's trying to get this house built on time for his customer. And then that affects the supply chain because if the contractor is not ordering the material, then the supply chain is weakened.
In central New York, A.J. Warmoth owns a dairy farm and also chairs the Northeast Dairy Producers Association. He hopes the U.S. and Canada reach a better trade deal. But existing tariffs, like on steel and aluminum, stacked with the uncertainty, have already created economic pressure.
So a lot of people are building barns. A lot of people are, you know, investing in their operations. And it just raises the cost on everything. Cement, steel, anything you're doing in using in a building project or anything, it's, those costs have escalated exponentially.
These new tariffs cover a slew of items coming out of Canada. Everything from chandeliers to ice skates to dairy and alcohol. Amy Magnus is a customs broker based in Vermont and helps businesses calculate tariffs when shipping across the border. She says she's never seen anything like this before in her 40 years of experience.
I am telling my customers, please check the lists and see if you have any products that appear on those lists. If you do have, let's say, all these shipments of ice skates that you want to bring into the United States, bring them in right now.
Magnus says she hopes both countries work out a resolution. She's worried these new tariffs will create a colder relationship between Canada and the U.S. For NPR News, I'm Richard Haller.
This is NPR News.
It's 8:56. You're listening to The Morning Show on People Powered KAXE, where we receive support from ICTV, providing information for and about Itasca County on Apple TV, Roku, and watchictv.org.
Man, Heidi, the news team is getting some well-deserved rest this morning, but we are already having to gear up for the general election, which seems crazy, but November is not that far away, and pretty soon here we'll be seeking more answers for our general election guide. If you looked at the primary election guide and used that to guide your vote, be sure to check out our general election guide, which we should have available for you sometime probably in about a month, I would say, is a reasonable time that we would have that put together. Hopefully a little bit sooner, we'll see. Got a lot of candidates to wrangle.
Yeah, that's for sure. We may be talking, the news team may be talking today to some of the people who won in the primaries. You'll hear some of that reporting and a lot more as we go forward, getting ready for the generals during this midterm election. It's going to be really interesting to see. One thing that was fun, the crow is out there. I was like, what is that noise?
Yeah, they're very loud.
Since Stella, our reporters Stella and Emma, are not from Minnesota, I was telling them one day over lunch of how dedicated Minnesotans are to voting.
Right. And we
show
up.
They looked at me like I was nuts. And I'm like, no, not kidding.
Yes. Well, and I will say that in looking through some social media last night as I was trying desperately to wind down, which is probably not the best thing to look at, right? But I was seeing a lot of folks say that they voted for a primary election in the first time ever, mm-hmm. You know, and these are people who I know to be engaged citizens who just choose to just do the general. But they were motivated for one reason or another to show up for the primary election this time around. And I think it's going to show in the turnout. I do. We'll see. We'll probably get some more numbers from the state today about what the statewide turnout was like. But we do know that we broke a record for a non-presidential primary for a turnout and in the mail and absentee ballots.
Okay. We received support this morning from Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, celebrating 50 years of